Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Ours. I'm Gabrielle Cardona. I've been a relationship coach and an MBTI practitioner for 15 years. I've helped individuals and couples reach their goals. Originally, it was basically in their professional lives, then with things like their finances, but it inevitably always came back to one very important theme: their relationships. Everything they do in their lives will eventually include, involve, or impact another person, and that person can be very important to them. So, learning how to relate and communicate and connect with people in their lives was a vital element to whatever they were primarily hoping to do. That could be getting a job they wanted, it could be losing weight or saving money, buying a home, even trusting themselves more as a person. First, I help people accept themselves, so then they are able to truly accept others. That's the key to connecting with others in a profound and meaningful way. When they do that, everything in their life changes, and the positive impact of those changes makes things look and feel different, both for them and those they love. In my show, I discuss important life questions with my listeners. Questions like, what does a healthy relationship look like? And what makes a relationship truly successful? And how does a successful relationship combine, involve both individuals? And then, how can you maintain something good once you truly have it? Well, in the simplest explanation, relationships are a dynamic between two individuals that include three levels of connection: a physical one, a mental one, and an emotional one. But there are actually three different elements to a relationship that require activity on each of those three different levels. That's each of the two individual people separately, because they each have their own physical and mental and emotional constitution. But the third element is a dynamic of what they create when they come together. It's a dynamic energy that's produced, separate and distinct from each of them as individual people when they're apart. So, my show is to first help people learn how to become better individuals, separate from any other person in the world. Then, to help them understand how doing that will naturally just bring out the best in others, so that whenever they do come together as two separate people, they can have a positive, a phenomenal impact on the world as a combined entity, as a couple. So it's time to define and truly understand what's yours, what's mine, and what's ours. This week, the show is going to be about a question that everyone who has ever been in a relationship of any kind has ever had. What goes into successful communication? Yep, that's a simple question, right? Well, a simple answer: two things, talking and listening, or conveying a message and receiving a message. Oh, that's easy enough to understand and simple enough to appreciate, but it's still hard to successfully do. And it's kind of complicated to explain. Well, how can that be? Something that should be naturally occurring in a consistent way between people, that brings them together and unifies them in a relationship that's easy to understand, should be easy to do, shouldn't it? Well, maybe. But there is a consistent challenge that comes up in relationships, all kinds of relationships, between all kinds of people. We've all experienced it. It's conflict. If no one ever really wants to fight, why is it such a common and a frequent occurrence? If people are genuinely trying to connect with each other, why do they seem to constantly argue? It almost seems like the more they care about each other, even love each other, the worse the fighting can be. Why is that? Well, this week we're going to be talking about true connection between people. What it includes, what it's able to overcome, what effective communication consists of, and how conflict prevention is worth exponentially more than conflict resolution. By the time most people go to get help, they're wanting to figure out how to solve the problems. But the key is preventing those problems in the first place with effective communication. And most importantly, how direct contact is the key to successful communication, because that's what leads to genuine connection. Now, we all know that technology has undermined genuine communication, human communication, because it's literally removed the people from the entire experience of communication. Words are only about 7% of the communication process. The other 93% is the human interaction. Our five senses, our tone of voice can make the exact same words on a piece of paper mean five different things based on those variables that simply don't exist on a machine. Even video, though it's visual, still has limitations on what it conveys in a human interaction. Okay, so we're talking about 93% that's not words. Well, it's made up of body language and tone of voice. The body language is actually, studies have shown it's about 55% of what we're communicating. And our tone of voice, what we're actually doing with our voice as we're saying the words, is 38%. So when you don't hear a voice and you can't see a body, how much of a message is actually never conveyed by the person speaking? But then let's also look at things like the rate of thought. Let's just stop and think about how fast we think. Some studies have shown that when conceptual ideas as thoughts, as complete thoughts, are actually turned into words, people can think up to 300 words per minute. Okay, that's 18,000 words per hour. That's really fast. But the average rate of speech is only about 140 to 160 words per minute in average daily conversation. That's about half of what you're thinking. But then the absorption of the listener is only about 100 to 120 words per minute. Well, that's only a third of what you're thinking. Okay, now that's not too bad, but it means that slowing down when you're speaking is important for the one talking as a gift to the one listening. And when you're talking about something important, making sure that the idea was understood by the listener may require double and triple checking with the person that you're talking to just to make sure you're still on the same page. Now, that may take some time, but it's always worth it. Because think about what happens when a listener doesn't have the right idea of the person speaking, but the speaker continues on with a line of thought, a train of thought, to get to completion. Well, after a period of time, a misunderstanding early on in the conversation can create an entirely wrong idea in the mind of the other person. That's never a good thing. But what happens when people use electronic devices like their cellular phones or tablets? Well, people actually only read about 80 to 100 words per minute, and they only text about 20 to 30. Now, if they're on a keyboard, they can type. If they're good, they can do about 60 to 70. But most people on their phone only text about 30, maybe 45 if they're good, and then sending and waiting the response words per minute. So let's just consider this. If they're thinking at a conservative rate of 250, let's bring it down to a smaller number. If they're thinking 250 words a minute and they're only actually conveying about 10 to 15% of that when they're using their electronic devices, how much of their thoughts and feelings could be missed by the person reading the message? And if two people could, in an hour, again, conservatively, convey about 15,000 words by talking to each other verbally out loud, they're describing and explaining their thoughts and feelings to each other. What could happen if they're texting or instant messaging at a rate of only about 1,500, 15,000, 1,500, how much could get lost? Then The mistaken order of words could easily make the entire sentence misunderstood. That's a small detail, but a huge element when we have electronic devices that correct us. They might actually put a wrong word in there. Or if we're doing the click on the complete thought at the end, well, you know what? The syntax, the order of the words really is important. Two words in a different place can change the entire concept being conveyed. Enough said. No pun intended. People in the 21st century avoid personal interaction with each other for many different, often personal reasons. So let's take a look now at the other 93% of human communication. The part that's got nothing to do with the words, it's personal human interaction. When my mom became a part of a religious organization that had, just as part of its weekly meetings, what was called a theocratic ministry school. I knew, even at the ripe old age of 5 years old, that how you speak to people was a huge part of life. Not just while you were preaching or on a platform, but when you're looking at someone face to face. They covered subjects like sense stress and modulation, gestures and eye contact. You know, people go to school for this stuff. They pay tens of thousands of dollars to get the direct teaching, the education about these different elements to human interaction. We got to go up on stage and give presentations that we had written ourselves and practiced for weeks in advance. It was really fun because we were all learning and struggling together. The support and encouragement was a huge part of what made it easier for all of us. And when you had a chance to give a 5-minute presentation in front of your friends and family, you also got the chance to be comfortable with your vulnerability. That's the part of relationships that people struggle with. Truly being vulnerable. That's what makes a relationship intimate. So, when we come back, we're going to take a look at the elements to successful human interaction. You might want to get a pen and paper because we're going to go over a lot of different things that go into human interaction. We'll be right back just after a brief break. I'm Gabrielle Cardona. This is yours, mine, and ours.
BBS Radio.
Welcome back to Yours, Mine, and Ours. I'm your host, Gabrielle Cardona, and today we're talking about the elements to successful communication based on meaningful human interaction. Now, there are many obstacles to our listening attentively, right? Our minds can be crowded with our own thoughts and feelings. Anxieties, fantasies, what's going on inside of us can take us away from the conversations that we're having. Then there are things like noise and movement in our environment that may distract us. Then we have things like physical discomfort that make it hard for us to even concentrate on the process of listening. If there's things happening in our bodies, that's kind of where we're actually at. So just being used to being overstimulated at all times has created an ADHD disease. Well, it's actually something going on in a nationwide epidemic for people in the modern world. What can help us to keep our attention focused on a conversation that we're having with another person? Well, first of all, the eyes strongly influence where we focus our attention. Use your eyes to help you concentrate by keeping them on the person talking to you, that you are talking to. Resist the temptation to turn your head in the direction of every noise or movement because right now, with the illness we've got going around, we don't have a lot of noise and movement and people in our immediate environment, external environment, but still, we have these tendencies to look wherever we hear noise or whenever we see movement. If your eyes are flooding your mind with distracting information, you're just going to miss out on what's being said. Now think about this. Do you generally find it easy to converse with others? For some, the very thought of engaging in conversation, especially with someone you don't know, people they don't know, causes anxiety. Some people may be shy. Introverts simply are not disposed to direct, personal, verbal interaction. They may wonder things like, what should I even talk about? Or how can I get a discussion started? Or what can I do to keep it going? On the other hand, confident and outgoing people may tend to dominate a conversation. Is that true of you? A challenge may be to draw others out and to learn to listen to what is being said. And you know what? Not interrupting, that's a life skill. So all of us, whether we're shy or outgoing, need to develop and keep cultivating the art of conversation. So let's start with a key ingredient to verbal, direct verbal interaction. When we're having a conversation, pausing. In speech, properly placed pauses are very important because without those pauses, what is said may sound like babble instead of a clear expression of a clear thought. Appropriate pausing helps to impart clarity to your speech for your listener. It can also be used in such a way that your main points will make a lasting impression. So then how can you determine when and where you should pause and how long a pause should be when you're in a conversation? Well, pausing to punctuate. Now, punctuation has become an important part of written language, but with technology, it's almost been completely eliminated. But a pause may indicate the end of a statement or a question if it's a period or a question mark, but it can also be a comma. In some languages, it's used to set off quotations. Some punctuation indicates the relationship of one part of a sentence to other parts. A person who reads to himself can see the punctuation marks in a statement on a page, but failure to pause when required by punctuation when you're speaking may make it difficult for others to understand what it is that you're saying, or it may even result in distorting the meaning of your message, what you're trying to say. Now, one of my favorite scriptures is one where Jesus is being quoted. Different religions take it different ways. And what does it really even matter? Well, how would you interpret this statement? Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. Well, if you put the comma after the word today, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise, as opposed to somewhere else in a sentence. Truly, I tell you, today. No, truly I tell you, today you will. Wow, so is he telling you today, or are you going to be in paradise today? Pausing is very important. But in addition to punctuation, the thoughts are wanting to be conveyed within the hearer as well as the listener. There's actually two different people. A famous musician once said, "The notes that I handle are no better than many other pianists, but the pauses between the notes, that is where the art resides." And the same is true when you're speaking. Appropriate use of pausing will add beauty and meaning to your well-expressed thoughts and feelings. Pausing in everyday speech usually doesn't present a problem because you already know the ideas that you want to convey to the people that you're talking to. But if you have the mannerism of pausing just at regular intervals, regardless of what your actual thoughts are, your conversation could actually lack clarity and be confusing for the people that you're speaking to. You might not have ever thought about that, but pay attention to yourself the next time you're having a conversation. How often do you pause, if you do at all? That's a place where your listeners may start to get the wrong idea, end up with an inaccurate thought if it's not accurately placed, and that wouldn't be good. But pause can give your listener an opportunity to reflect or to adjust, to recognize a change of direction if you have a complete change of thought. And that's going to help them grasp more clearly the next thought you present because their mind will still be with you. Give them a chance to shift. It's just as important for you to pause when you're changing from one idea to another as it is for you to slow down when you're turning the corner from one street into another. What would happen if you didn't actually brake as you turn the corner? You might actually have a pretty bad accident, and you wouldn't want that to happen in your conversation. But one reason why some people rush from one idea to the next without pausing is that they want to get as much out as possible. And that may be a tendency of their everyday speech pattern. Perhaps everyone around them speaks that way. But that does not result in effective communication. If you have something to say that's worth hearing and worth remembering, then take time to make the idea stand out clearly. Recognize that pauses are essential to speech. That conveys ideas clearly. But then you can also pause for emphasis. A pause for emphasis is often a dramatic one, and that's one that precedes or follows a statement or a question being expressed with intensity. That kind of a pause gives your audience the opportunity to reflect on what you've just said, or it creates an expectancy, an excitement, an eagerness to pay attention to what's about to follow. Keep in mind that pauses for emphasis should be limited to truly significant statements. Otherwise, the value of those statements will just be lost. When you're changing your thought, when you're asking a question, you want to make sure people's minds are engaged in the conversation, even when they are not the ones speaking the words. Now, ladies, we know that men have a much shorter attention span than we do, especially when we're in an important conversation. Yeah, okay. When is she going to be done? When is she going to be done? Well, you know what? Make what you're saying informative, but also pleasing for a man to listen to. Because actually, men do like to listen to us when we are pleasing to listen to. But we also may need to accept something. You know what? You got to pause when your circumstances require it. Interruptions may also occasionally require that you pause, right? Like passing traffic or a crying child. That creates an interruption in your conversation. If a disturbance is going on, it's not too severe. You may be able to raise your voice, your volume, and continue. But if it's a loud and disturbing, you might just want to pause. Your audience isn't going to be listening to you anyway. So it's a good thing. And it shows them that you appreciate what they're going through more than what you're trying to say. And you know what? Let them respond. You might not necessarily have to, because if you're, you know, you got a good thought going on, you just out of consideration could pause to let them contribute to the conversation. And you know what? Some people never seem to pause. If that's a problem that you have, put forth some earnest effort to cultivate this quality. Now, this is an important point. I like this one a lot. It's called sense stress. I personally love this one because it's what makes human interaction actually animated. The human voice is a marvelous instrument, and it's capable of great variety. When properly used, it can give life to a conversation. It can touch your listener's heart. It can stir emotions and motivate people to action, stimulation. But this can't be achieved by simply marking notes in your mind to indicate where, adjust the volume, change the pace, vary the pitch. You know what? When you speak out loud, it's important that you say individual words correctly, but also emphasize the key words and thought-containing expressions in a way that conveys your idea. So your use of sense stress helps the audience understand what you're trying to say. It could be one person you're talking to. It could be a group of people. But sense stress is saying the word in a different way when you are thinking a thought. The listener needs to know what you're thinking. Power, pitch, and pace are what make your presentation enjoyable to listen to. More than that, it can actually tell your audience how you feel about what it is that you're saying. Your attitude towards your message, your thoughts and feelings, that can influence how they will end up feeling about it. So, proper use of modulation really is something that shows you're speaking from the heart. And when it's used wisely, modulation will not attract undue attention to you, and send stress will not have a negative impact because it helps your audience enter into the spirit of the subject that you want to discuss. And proper send stress involves more than giving added emphasis to just a few words. It's about the right words being emphasized. If the wrong words are stressed, the meaning of what you say may be unclear to your audience, the listeners who in turn may let their own thoughts drift into other things because you've lost their attention. Even though your message may be good, having a poor delivery with ineffective sense stress will be less effective in connecting you with your audience. But this is almost impossible when communicating with technology because electronic devices don't afford you the opportunity to make that modification. And added emphasis can be conveyed by various means. They're frequently used in combination with each other, but technology doesn't have that experience, that firsthand personal experience. So when you're deciding on what to emphasize, if you do have to use some kind of limited electronic device, consider the following things. Within any sentence, are there words that should be given added stress? Not only because in the rest of the sentence they're more important, but the context of the sentence. What are you trying to really, out of a 15-word sentence, trying to convey? Then, since sense stress may be used to emphasize the beginning of a new thought, maybe you need to put a period or a comma in order to get them to focus on a particular word. If you don't have the italics or the bold as an option, you can use pausing to actually do sense stress once removed. And then proper sense stress can also be used to highlight main points of a sentence when you're verbally speaking to someone. If you are conveying a complete thought within a sentence, you can show why that's important to you because it shows how you feel about it. And that is the ultimate message that your listener is looking for when they're interacting with you. Now, what may cause a problem is that some people use what might be determined as a periodic stress instead of actual sense stress. Well, in an effort to use sense stress, some people employ increased volume in a way that may take the listener to an uncomfortable place. They may actually make a listener feel that they're being scolded. Now, that rarely has a good result. If sense stress is not naturally happening by the person who's talking, the impression may be given that the speaker is talking down to their listener, or you know what? How much better just to simply appeal to them on the basis of love and consideration for their feelings to help them see that what you're saying is important because they are important. Okay, but then what about actual volume? Well, like we mentioned before, introverts, extroverts, you know what? If a person lacks needed volume simply in order to be heard, the listener will get frustrated with them. But on the other hand, if the speaker increases his volume at the wrong time, the audience may become uncomfortable, even annoyed, and you know what? They're going to shut down. They may be quiet, they may be looking at you, but honey, they're not thinking about what you're saying, and they're really not looking, thinking, listening to you. But extroverts tend to just be more loud in their speech in general, and introverts are frequently asked to speak up. So, knowing how to manage Mastering that skill, volume adjustment, is very helpful when you're directly interacting with other people. But then consider your audience. That's the next point with the volume. Who are you talking to? Is it an individual? To a small group? To a large convention? Volume that's suitable in one situation might not be appropriate in another. Well, do you have a microphone? Can you up the volume? Maybe you can down the volume on that device. How can you tell whether the volume that you're using is suitable in any given situation? Well, simple answer, your audience reaction. That's one of the best barometers. If you notice that someone is straining to hear you should endeavor to up the volume. Or if someone is hard of hearing, you may just need to raise your voice in general. But shouting will never endear you to people who may simply react a little slower if they're having a hard time. You know what? Because their own limitations, you just need to adjust to them. And if you raise your voice past a certain level, it's actually considered a sign of rudeness. And in some cultures, too much volume is viewed as angry, right? Anger or impatience. That's gonna change the way that your hearers, your listeners, are thinking and feeling about what you have just said, because it's going to change what they think and feel about you as a person, separate from your message. Okay, now, obviously, when you're outdoors, you have distracting noises. You don't want to compete with traffic and children and barking dogs, loud music, blaring television. Okay, then it's your call, it's your decision. Do you want to up your volume, or do you just want to wait until that extra noise, that extra sound that you would be competing with goes away? Well, then you do need to also consider your audience. What would be better for them? It's always better to consider the needs and thoughts and feelings of the other person, just as a general rule. Then consider what your topic is. Well, what's your objective? Let's go ahead and take another break. Think about the things that we've covered so far, and now we're actually getting into some of the deeper things about communication. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Gabrielle Cardona, yours, mine, and ours. Welcome back to Yours, Mine, and Ours. I'm Gabrielle Cardona, and today we're talking about effective communication. So we've been talking about things like your words. They're very important. Obviously, your choice of words, your order of words, they're going to affect the things that the people that you're talking to think and feel. But then things like your tone of voice, your volume. What about body language? Now, people of some cultures consider gestures more natural. It's really something very freely used. Well, sometimes more than other backgrounds, different cultures. Yet practically everyone talks with changes of their facial expressions and some form of gesturing, body motion. This is true both in personal conversation and in public speaking. Take note of that when you're looking at people who are around you having conversations, what you see on television, people giving presentations, professional presentations. Ideas and feelings are communicated not only with the voice, but also through gestures and facial expressions. Failure to use these resources well may make it seem like you're indifferent, like you genuinely don't care. Well, but when these means of communication are tastefully blended together with the things being said, the effectiveness of speech is exponentially increased. It's greatly enhanced. Even if you're speaking over the telephone, if you make appropriate use of gestures and facial expressions, your voice will more readily convey the importance of your message as well as your personal feelings about what you're saying. Your body actually changes your voice. So, whenever you are speaking, whether it's extemporaneously or if you're reading, whether your audience is looking at you or somewhere else, maybe a copy of what you're reading, maybe it's a paper, something, a message. If you are discussing it, your gestures and facial expressions are of high value. But gestures fall into two general categories. There are descriptive and emphatic. Descriptive gestures and emphatic gestures. Okay, let's take a look at those each. Descriptive gestures express action or show dimension or location. They are a manifestation of something physical that you are describing with your words. Your body can actually create a mental image when you use your arms and your upper body. Your whole motion of your body can paint an actual picture. Your arms and your hands, they're actually two different things. They are connected, but they serve two very different purposes. Now, that has to do with the emphatic gestures. Emphatic gestures express feeling and conviction. They punctuate and vitalize and reinforce ideas. Emphatic gestures are important, but beware, emphatic gestures can easily become mannerisms. Now, if you use the same gesture again and again, it may begin to draw attention to itself instead of enhancing the thoughts and feelings you're trying to convey when you communicate. So, in determining the extent to which you should use emphatic gestures and maybe the sort of gestures that are appropriate for your conversation, consider the feelings of the people that you're speaking to. Pointing at someone may make them feel uncomfortable. Some people aren't bothered by that. Know your audience. If a male in some cultures were to make certain gestures, such as putting his hand over his mouth to express surprise, this would be almost viewed as effeminate. Now, in some parts of the world, it's considered immodest for women to gesture freely with their hands. So, in those places, women need to make good use of their facial expressions when they're communicating. Learn about the culture and society that you are in when you are having a conversation. And before a small group, sweeping gestures may actually be viewed as comical. That's in almost any part of the world. As you become more at ease when you're in conversational speaking, any emphatic gestures that you do use will express your inner feelings. They show your conviction, your sincerity, your priorities, your passion. They add meaning to your message. So remember, they're an opportunity to really make your conversations more meaningful. And then we have the expressions on our faces. More than any other bodily feature, your face expresses how you really feel. Isn't it strange when you're looking at someone and they have no expression on their face? There's just something not right about that. That's just not, ooh, it's weird. Your eyes, your mouth, the inclination of your head, those things all play a part. Without a word being spoken, your face can convey indifference, disgust, amazement, delight, and amusement. When those facial expressions accompany the words being spoken, they add emotional impact to what's being said. Nature has placed a large concentration of your muscles, we got a lot of muscles in our body, on your face. There are over 30 muscles in your face. Did you know that? Nearly half of those muscles come into play just when you smile. And a warm smile confirms your genuine happiness. But on the other hand, if your face is devoid of expression altogether, this may raise questions about your sincerity and your interest in the person that you're talking to. But more than that, the smile just tells people that you feel good about them personally. That is especially important in these days when people are often afraid of strangers, the world we live in. You know what? When someone's nice to someone else, they start to get suspicious. What do you want? Your smile can help people around you to relax and be receptive to what you say. It may take a little bit of time to establish that genuine trust, but the smile is the first step to creating trust. Now, what about our eyes? Our eyes communicate our attitude and our emotions. They can indicate things like surprise or fear. They can convey compassion. At times, they may betray doubt or give evidence of grief or sadness. It can be said, we speak with our eyes. Others may draw conclusions about us and about what we say on the basis of where we focus our eyes when we're talking to them. In many cultures, people tend to trust an individual who maintains friendly eye contact with them. And conversely, they may doubt the sincerity or even competence of a person who looks at his feet or at some object rather than directly at the person that he's talking to. Some other cultures view any intense eye contact as rude or aggressive or personally challenging to them. This is especially in the case when speaking with members of the opposite sex or to someone in a titled or higher position. And in some areas, if a younger person were to make direct eye contact when they're speaking to an older person, that's viewed as disrespectful, not considerate. However, where it's not offensive, looking at an individual in the eye when making an important statement to them can add emphasis to what is being said. Observing the expression in the person's eyes, where appropriate, may give you indications as to how to deal with a situation, how to more effectively communicate with that person. If the person that you're talking to is angry, or if they're not really interested in what you're saying, you just might be able to see it in their eyes. And if they don't understand you, you may also realize that just by doing a real quick check. If they're getting impatient, you'll usually be able to tell. If they're interested, that's going to be evident too. The expression in their eyes may alert you the need to adjust things like your power, pitch, pace, volume, pausing. You know what? Making an added effort to involve them in the conversation, to draw them in, could keep them with you. Or, you know what? It's time to terminate the conversation. Maybe possibly follow through at a later time. If shyness makes actual visual contact difficult for you at first, don't give up because with practice, appropriate visual contact will become natural for you, and it will add to your effectiveness in communicating with others. When you throw a ball to someone, you look to see if it was caught by that person. Each thought in your conversation is a separate throw to your listener. A catch may be indicated by their response, and if you maintain good contact with that person, you're going to be sure that your ideas are caught. Now, the most important part, my favorite thing to talk about, understanding the personality of the individual that you're communicating with is one of the best investments you can make. Get to know the person, their nature of their personality, the nurture of their life experience, because that will help you know how to modify your delivery of your message, adjusting to them as people. The exact same sentence can mean four different things coming from four different people. Well, and you know what? You telling four different people the exact same words can be heard in four completely different ways. Even with the same gestures, body language, eye contact, sense stress, modulation, syntax, all of those things, they can mean different things to different people. So, what really is personality? Well, one of my favorite examples to use is, what would you say if your child came up to you one day and said, "Mommy or Daddy, can I play with the matches?" Well, obviously you would say no. Well, Not necessarily. It would depend on their personality. Just a real quick example. Well, my oldest is an ESFJ. He's an extroverted, sensory, feeling judger. If I was doing the dishes in the kitchen one day and he came up to me and said, "Mommy, can I play with the matches?" The translation of that sentence is actually, "I'm very angry with you right now and I'm giving you a heads up. I'm about to reach for a fire device and I'm going to burn my house down if you don't get your mother business together. Mommy, can I play with the matches?" My response to him would be, "All right, you know what? You're upset. I'm going to stop what I'm doing. Let's talk." Okay, well, you know what? My second son, he's an ISTP. If he said, "Mommy, can I play with the matches?" That would translate to, "I really want to see something beautiful. I want to smell something amazing. I want to hear the friction. I want to light something on fire and look at the different colors. And I want to experience something amazing that nature has created." Okay, so if he came to me and said, "Mommy, can I play with the matches?" My response would be, "Well, have you cleaned your bedroom?" I'd actually walk over to his bedroom and say, let me see in the closet, under the bed. Wow. Yeah, you know what? Go ahead and use the ones on top of the refrigerator. Those are the ones that you know. Leave the other ones in the garage. Those are your daddy's. And as soon as I'm done here with the dishes, I'll come out and I'll burn something with you." Whereas my daughter, she's an ENFJ. If she came to me and said, "Mommy, can I play with the matches?" That would mean, "I have a friend, I have someone, a relative in my life that I'm doing something with over here on the side, and they want me to play with the fire, but I don't want to, and I just don't have the strength to say no to them. Mommy, please, please, please say I can't play with the matches so that I don't have to say that I can't play with the matches to this person because I care very much about how they're feeling and I don't want to lose their love and approval and friendship." And so, you know what? If my ENFJ daughter said that to me, "Can I play with the matches?" I'd say, "Okay, honey. Who's your friend? Who's your person in your life asking you to do this that you want me to say no to?" Okay, I'll say no for you this time. But sweetie, we got to talk about the kind of friends you're choosing in your life. And you need to start learning how to say no for yourself. Get to know the people that you're talking to. Know their nature because it shows them that you're interested in having more than just a brief and superficial interaction with them. Human interaction is about personal connection through meaningful communication. When you're thinking about how much time goes into effectively communicating, think about how much time and energy are lost when conflicts arise as a result of misunderstandings. How much time would you be willing to spend with someone that you love in a relaxed way? Talking about whatever is important to them if it shows them that you care. Would you be willing to spend an hour at a time with someone if you knew they weren't going to argue with you, but it was an important topic for discussion? Stopping your activity to spend time with someone important to talk about something important is always important. How much would it matter to you if you knew that you could reduce about 75% of the conflicts that arise in your daily life just learning how to personally communicate through direct personal interaction? The quality of your relationships directly impact the quality of your health and your work. That's your soul. Take time this week to personally interact with people. Don't text them. Call them on your phone. Let them hear your voice. Work on your volume and pausing, sense stress modulation. When you are physically in direct personal contact with them, face to face, observe their body language. Look into their eyes when you speak to them. See how different you feel when you put your electronic device somewhere else. If you have questions, if you have thoughts that you'd like to share with me or ask me to have me direct on my show, I've decided to make my show interactive with my listeners. Go ahead and go onto the website of bbsradio.com. Go ahead and go to my website, yours, mine, and ours. You can fill out the form to get your information, contact information, and your question. I'll look over the questions from week to week, and we'll take time in the show at the beginning and at the end for people who do want to contribute or who want to ask me a specific question. And thank you so much for listening today. We'll be here same time next week. I'm Gabrielle Cardona. This is yours, mine, and ours.